by for Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors with your host, Drew Kirby.
Hey, this is Luke Holmes.
I am Morgan Wallen.
I'm Riley Green.
I'm Travis Denning.
Hey, I'm Aaron Lewis.
Hey, it's Luke Bryan.
I'm Tim McGraw.
What's up? This is Ian Munsick.
Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
It's everybody's favorite show and everybody's favorite part of the show that we do each year, and that, Janet, is bear season is upon us.
That's right. It was a fantastic winter when they all went to sleep, but they're back, and Dr. Dan is super happy that the season is almost upon us because we all know he does absolutely nothing once the snow starts to fly. And so, like, he's ready to actually work again.
Yeah, I'm sure that's exactly how it is, right, Dan?
Yeah, if the listeners could hear, they could see the look on his face. Unfortunately, Dr. Dan's getting ready to go from busy to extremely busy as we get ready to launch straight into bear season.
Yeah, so the doctor's in the house, and Dan, we've been... this is the third or fourth show that we've done on bears because it's so important that there are people that aren't really as aware as they should be, you know, especially in bear country. Everybody in Wyoming likes to get out and camp and hunt, but we talk about it being bear season or close to bear season. Do we have bears out moving around at this point?
Oh, there might be a couple. As of while we're talking right now live, there's probably not many. There might be a few, but as we progress into March, we'll start seeing more bears waking up in certain areas, and usually those males wake up first and females next, and females with young last. That'll go into May. So the real exodus, I guess, hasn't started yet, but we definitely start to see some bears poking their heads up in March usually.
So we start, you know, we talk a lot about fish and the moon cycles and seasons and things like that. Does the approach of the spring season like really trigger the bear? Like, do they feel something different in the atmosphere?
Yeah. You know, it's all related to what food is there. Right. And I mean, that's the evolutionary reason that bears sleep in the winter is because most of their food sources are not available. And so they go to den in the fall when the food sources are gone, and then they wake up, generally timing it with green spring or spring green up and foods available. So if a bear pokes his head out, you know, there was that video of the bear on a ski slope and things like that. And we know bears can wake up anytime during the course of the winter and even maybe poke their head out. We've seen females that have cubs in the den getting out and getting bedding for the females, but they don't stay out, right? Because there's no food for them. And so it's really timing it's synchronized with when there's food available for the most part. And so, and that's why an early riser that stays out, they might be a little more, might see them more because they're looking for food. They're moving more and they might be in areas where people are as well.
If we have a season like this where, you know, here, at least in the Casper region and some where the grizzlies are, that's been winter there. But if we have seasons like this where, you know, we're getting to 50s and 60s during the weeks and then it'll get cold for a snap, do the bears, they start getting confused? Because obviously, you know, some of the plants are already starting to bud out and right. And then it causes some issues.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say confused. You know, that's definitely something we're looking at, especially with grizzly bears. Has there been a changing in timing of den emergence or going into the den? And so that is something we're looking at. I mean, overall, the species are extremely adaptable, and they kind of learn. I'm sure they know, they're a lot more intuitive into whether it's just warm or whether spring is actually here. And so, but definitely once there are some of that green up occurring and there's some food to be found, they're probably more likely to stay out versus get up, look around a little bit, maybe stretch, and then go back into the den.
So they adjusting is on the fly for the bear species, huh?
Yeah. I mean, if you look at bears in general, both black bears and grizzly bears, they're very adaptable. I mean, black bears occur across North America, and in some of the southern portions, the males don't even go into a den because there's still food available. It's just an adaptation through time, depending on where these animals are as to how and when they den. But it's based on what's available, and I guess thousands of years of evolution too.
Right. So is it good to be a bear in Wyoming? I mean, you just mentioned, like the southern parts, the bears will stay out all year round because there's food available. So would a bear be, in better situation if they were able to eat all year round?
Oh, not necessarily. I think because of their life history, I think it's advantageous to them to kind of take a break, like they do in the winter here. And I mean, that's their whole life cycle is built on making more bears and getting fat, right? And so they do that, and that's built into their overall behavior as to then they have that ability to sleep and rejuvenate, and their pads switch out on their feet, their claws grow back, all these things that happen. We don't have as, I guess, productive black bear habitats as some areas with more berries and things like that. But that's not a function of poor habitat. It's just we're not going to have the densities or size of black bears as some other places do. I mean, if you look in the eastern United States with acorn-producing trees and berries, I mean, they've got black bears there bigger than our grizzly bears. But that's just a function of availability. So we have very robust black bear populations. We've seen an increase in abundance and distribution through time in Wyoming. And, they don't necessarily overgrow their bounds. And so they kind of match with the habitat that is available.
Do you feel that the black bear population in Wyoming is up quite a bit over the last few years, or is it hanging pretty regular?
No, it's pretty regular. A lot of them, I would say our populations are pretty stable. There's been some areas where we've seen some expansion, but it's never exponential with bears. It's a little slower, and you can see it, with deer or elk or smaller mammals, you can see a really big peak quickly. But we don't, it's more of a incremental growth with bears, and we've seen that through time. But, a lot of our populations are pretty stable across the state with some expansion and some reduced, densities in certain areas.
When, a bear's lifespan seems it's a little bit longer or a lot longer in some cases than say a deer or an elk would be. So is that part of the reason? I mean, like a family of humans will maybe have two or three kids as a young adult and then won't have them for a long time. Does that help the slowdown of the bear population? Or maybe they'll just have them early?
I guess it's just a function. They don't have to worry about mortgages and things. So they're not having cubs every year. It takes until they're four or five to have cubs. And so, but I do think we see a lot of areas that once they reach a higher density, there's more being put on the landscape to an extent, if that makes sense, like a critical mass type of a notion. And so, basically once a female starts having young, they'll have young every couple of years. And there is some senescence in older age, but we've seen 24, 25 year old black bears having cubs still. So.
Wow. When you get a larger group of bears in one area, I mean, obviously you get all those bears in one area that have to fight for the same food. So then do they, kind of get into rivalries and, that there's a hierarchy in everything, and in the bear world, it's the same. And how do they figure that part out?
There is a dominance hierarchy that you would expect with older males having a home range that are more dominant to subadult males. But I guess it starts with the overall life history of the species, and that like a female, we'll use even numbers here. So if a female has two cubs, one male, one female, usually the female will set up shop next to her mother, but the male will disperse. And so males are the more colonizers of new areas, and they look for those vacant home ranges and things like that. They're not considered territorial by nature, and they can be aggressive, like if they're localized on a food source, but generally it's that the adult males have the highest dominance, and then females with young are the smallest area that they occupy, and they're very cognizant of other bears and other carnivores for their young. And so it kind of starts with that, with the overall behavior of the female setting up shop closer to the mother because of learned behaviors of where food is, things like that. Those young males will disperse into other areas.
What's an average number of bears per area? You know, like you get the female that sets up shop, the male goes away. So how far away will that bear go? I mean, is it something where...
That's a great question. It depends on the scenario. They can go, trying to think some of our dispersal distances. We've definitely seen them go from one end of a mountain range to another, or even disperse from one contiguous habitat to another, the males. We have differing densities of black bears depending on where you're at, depending on the habitat availability, but anywhere from 6 to 12 bears per 100 square kilometers. And so, sorry, I'm using kilometers, but that's what we do. We don't have extremely high densities of black bears really anywhere. So
how far will they travel? Like in a day, how far will a bear travel from home? Will they go out and hit a 50-mile range, or are they pretty homebody?
Well, it kind of depends on the time of year. Depends on what's going on too. We've actually Emily Davis just finished a master's thesis on black bears, and she worked for us. And one thing they saw is those young males in June are moving more. We've seen this with grizzly bears during the breeding season. That are not young males, but males are moving more in that June timeframe, and they're looking for receptive females for breeding. Like I said, the females with young have the smallest home range, which we're talking a pretty small footprint. But overall, the males have a lot larger home range size.
We're talking bears on Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors. Dr. Dan Thompson and Janet Millick from Game and Fish with us. Take a quick break. Be back to talk more about bears and, how predictable do they become? We'll find out in just minutes.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
As always, you can go check out any of our shows on demand in the radio station's app. If you've missed one or you want to rehear one, they're right there for your listening pleasure. We're talking Dr. Dan Thompson and Janet Millick from Wyoming Game and Fish Department about bears as we're getting to that time of year where those bears are going to start stirring. Dan, how predictable will a bear become?
They're predictable as to food sources. And so, that's how people hunt or take pictures of them. They know where the food sources are and they go to them. And so those are, you can time bear viewing or bear hunting with what food sources are available, but they're also very nocturnal. And so they're not as visual, and they're really good about hiding in the woods, quite honestly. And so you don't sit and glass them as well as you can, like a herd of elk or something like that. And then we know that especially like the males are more nocturnal, but then once females go into estrus, all bets are off. They move around a lot more. And the same goes for fall when they're hyperphagic. So when they're more active during the day in the fall, and they're more visual because they're eating more. And so there is some predictability to that, but there's also the unpredictability that we expect with all wildlife.
Right. Which and that's why it's so important to be, aware when you're out and know, your surroundings and know what you're getting into, because they're that unpredictable in certain cases. Mm-hmm. So it's always good to be alert and aware there. And when you talked about the fall time when they start to eat to ready to go to bed. Will they go back in bed in the same place? They'll den up in the same place as they have in the past?
Oh, that's a great question. So as far as den fidelity, den site fidelity, they'll generally go to the same area. We've actually done some black bear den work in the same hole under a tree. Went back a couple years later on a bear that had been tracked through time, and there was a root wad that we'd cut years before my time, and we went back, and so they will even use the same hole. They don't always use the same hole, but they're definitely there. There's an affinity to a certain drainage or area. Yes.
The bear life, it has to be really interesting. You've studied these guys for a long time now, and can you go up into a certain area and predict, okay, I'm going to be able to see, you know, this black bear at 4 p.m. because he likes to go eat off of this tree? I mean,
No way.
There's a lot of people who want Dan to do that for them, but as he mentioned earlier, bears are wild animals. And, you know, while creatures may have habits and places that they like to call home, they are still wildlife.
You know, there's people that have dedicated their lives to following a particular bear or two, and they're going to have a lot more insight into that specific animals where they might see it at a certain time of year. But I don't have omnipotence over that, or don't want to know that much, I guess. But I mean, anyone who's spent enough time in bear habitat is able to predict where the best chances are of seeing or encountering a bear and things like that.
A lot of times those bears that become internet famous or whatever are ones that are in high tourist areas, and they're, you know, the photographers that are always in the same spot, like you were saying, so they can kind of predict where they're going to be. But that also gets those bears into kind of a pattern, because they know there's the food opportunities that we always talk about that you don't want to do, and, you know, causing problems. Do you find that to be as much of a situation with maybe those bears that are off the beaten path that you very rarely see?
It's kind of it's a razor's edge of habituation that can lead to bad things. My favorite bear is the one that never gets seen. But I think it's amazing for people. It's great that we have the ability to see a bear in Wyoming, right? And I want to facilitate that. I just don't want people to take advantage of it. Certain settings become very habituated to people, just like other wildlife. And that's great for people to be able to have that viewing opportunity, but we don't want it to go beyond that, where people take advantage of it. And, you know, a habituated animal is one thing, but there's an easy jump from habituated to food condition or negative behaviors. And, it's, we're trying to keep bears as wild as possible, and all wildlife as wild as possible.
Do you have a pretty good idea of how many bears that we have in Wyoming? You know, a black bear total and a grizzly total? Or is it an estimation of what you see in a certain area?
Well, it's always an estimation. We've been studying the grizzly bear population since the 70s, and the most heavily studied wildlife population ever. So our numbers are more accurate as to how many we estimate there are. We don't have that level of estimation for black bears because we don't need to, quite honestly. We can track population trend in different areas of the state and look at what's going on with that population. Now, I will add, we've increased our knowledge of local bear densities in Wyoming. So we are working toward having a better idea of different numbers by unit area, but we don't necessarily need an exact number to properly manage and conserve a wildlife species. It's a component of that. But what we can say is we have very healthy, robust grizzly bear and black bear populations. And of course, grizzly bears is more we have a more accurate estimate just because of trying to demonstrate that they're recovered, they're healthy, they've been beyond recovered for a couple decades. Data helps to demonstrate that we know how well the populations do.
If a population gets overcrowded with a group of bears, you know, like where you don't see the bears, so it's a good thing. Will they naturally take care of that themselves? If you know, because obviously the food will
that's
be an issue.
Question. So, you know, I think our grizzly bear population epitomizes how that works. So we started seeing what you're alluding to is density dependence, and we started seeing density dependent impacts on the grizzly bear population, like in the core of the GYE, as early as the late 90s, right around 2000. What we see is decreased home range size, more infighting of bears, infanticide, where a male will kill the offspring because the female will recycle into estrus. And so we've actually seen reduced cub and yearling survival. And that's progressed through time as the population has expanded. And so, yeah, that is something you do see. But it's also important as bears expand into more human dominated landscapes that you can't necessarily just quote, let nature take its course. And so, you know, that's why we use our management and conservation tools and along with the fact of the thriving bear population. But yes, we do see that happening in GYE grizzly bears.
When you get to a location, let's say Casper Mountain, that is really starting to develop and, you know, the bear sightings become bigger. You know, we talk about it all the time. Everybody has a ring cam or they have a webcam that you can see things on now. You know, are we seeing more issues with the black bear to where like an area like Casper Mountain, the bears would maybe have to be, you know, dispersed to another area just because of problems?
Well, and I'll let Janet talk about this, but I always like to talk about conflict potential. With more people moving into an area or more people recreating into an area, that increases the potential for conflict with black bears because the black bear numbers aren't spiking or doing anything terribly different. I mean, there's fluctuations, but what we see is the change in the human component. And so that's why there's a lot of work done to educate the public, to remind people that we don't want to let bears get food rewards because of the increased potential for conflict. There's always going to be, I don't believe that there's the notion of zero conflict between wildlife and humans is not realistic in the current state of the earth. But we can do everything we can to reduce the potential in realizing that, you know, there's going to be some impacts to people from these animals, and there's going to be some impacts to the animals that we have to, you know, manage or even do things that the public doesn't like when we have to remove an animal or something because of its behavior. That's all part of it.
And a lot of that, Drew, goes right back to what Dan was talking about. You know, as more people move in, you know, we're having more of those conflicts, but as, you know, people who can think through what we're doing, we can also help reduce that conflict by doing a lot of things that we talk about in our BearWise Wyoming program. You know, things like feeding your dogs outside, leaving your garbage outside, bringing your barbecue in. And I know that seems like, you know, a lot of work, but if you're in places like on Garden Creek or on Casper Mountain, those things are very critical. And so, yes, as we do have ring cameras, we do see more of them. And as we have more cabins built, we do see more of them. And so one of the things that we do want to make sure that we're doing, though, is what we can as humans to make sure we are reducing that conflict. Because as Dan said, you know, ultimately, we don't want to have to remove that bear from the population. And, you know, when we do have to do that, 99% of the time, it could have been preventable from, you know, people making sure, and maybe I shouldn't throw that statistic out. I just saw Dan say like, no. So I made that 99% up. Let me just say that. But, you know, there is a very strong likelihood that that bear, when it is removed from the population, often is because of negligent humans. Whether we are camping and we're leaving our hamburgers out on the picnic table, or we are leaving our barbecue on the cabin porch. So that is something for people to make sure that, you know, if you have any questions on that, check out our BearWise Wyoming information.
You know, one question before we move on. We always talk about you got to make sure that you have your barbecues up, and you have to. When should people go into preparing for bear mode? Because, you know, over the wintertime, maybe you break out the barbecue every once in a while, and it's not worth, you know, putting it away because there aren't bears or anything. But, you know, what time of year should we start really, you know, thinking on, about that and putting the plan into place?
You know, we do it year round, Drew. It's something that is just good, good practice. And maybe the bear may not be what is attracted. Maybe it is another type of wildlife that may be coming in. It might be a mountain lion checking something out. You know, those sorts of things. It's just good practice, and it helps us keep our area clean, and it helps prevent some of those conflicts.
Well, I could talk bears for a long time. It's Dan, I know that has to be part of your appeal to it, is the interesting factors that go into all of these, you know, the animals. And here in Wyoming, you know, we are lucky to have the grizzlies and the black bears. So you get to experience both sides of that. So I'm sure that that it's got to be a pretty exciting day to day, even when you're not busy.
Yeah, we don't have a lot of boring days. Even if it's in the office, it's usually there's sometimes a little too much drama with these species, I would say. But you know, we've talked about this before. We never have to worry about apathy when it comes to these animals. Some of it might be misaligned as far as there's a lot of opinion, but there's a lot of interest, and that's a good thing. I mean, that's why we're here. You know, I can look at my calendar for March 1st and expect multiple media inquiries as to, are the bears out yet? You know, but it's
so Dan, are the bears out yet?
and my standard response is don't jinx it, but I mean, it is. It's something that, you know, adds to the mystique of Wyoming in the West that we have all these species there. But we also, you know, people still are here too, right? You know, there's this notion of mutual exclusivity when it comes to some of these species and people, and that's not the case.
Well, I would like to encourage anyone listening that I know that people have questions about bears, and I know that people are curious. But if you are curious, to reach out either to us here on the radio station's app and ask your question, and we'll get it to Dan and get it answered for you. So I know that people are always like, well, if a bear gets captured, what do they take it? Or, you know, what do they do with a bear? And, you know, so we can get those answered for you. And I know that this is a prime time for bear questions. And I think we're going to continue the conversation to talk more about safety and preparing for bears in the next couple of weeks. That sound okay?
Fantastic.
Dan Thompson, Janet Millick, thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
It's Drew along with Brian Woodward from Rocky Mountain Discount Sports. We are here at what seems to be the weirdest weather year we've had in a while. We haven't had any of the snow, but then the Big W has been back lately.
Big W has definitely put an impact on daily activities, but the days are coming.
That's true.
The days are coming.
Have you heard much on ice situations lately?
It's coming off real fast. Yeah, I mean, I was watching the web cameras down at Glendoe, and the ice all through the marina area, all the way through Whiskey Boat Ramp, looked like it was pretty much all cleared up. I think there's probably still some patches, but it should be pretty clear by today.
Yeah, and I heard over in Boysen that it was kind of one of those situations where it was good ice in some places, but they also had 18, 20 inches of ice at one point. So
yeah, it's starting to look pretty honeycombed, which, you know, that generally means once you get a little bit of wind on top of that, it's gonna come off fairly quick too, which I don't know how early we are, but it seems like we're 6 weeks earlier than last year.
Yeah, and you know, you start thinking about the options of things you want to do, and fishing, and you know, even some bird hunting. There's a little bit of time left on that too.
Yeah, we're actually shooting some pheasants this afternoon out at Riverbend, and it's going to be it ends the 31st of the month. I guess probably the 30th, because the 31st is Easter. So they're closing down on the 30th, as far as I'm aware. But yeah, we still got 2 or 3 weeks out there, and then full-fledged fishing season.
When, you know, if a family wants to go out and do some shooting like that, I mean, obviously coming in here to the store and getting everything you need for, you know, your pack. We talk about the packs you take out on a big hunt, mm-hmm. not the same what you're taking on one of these smaller hunts like this, but you still got to have the right proper tools.
Yeah, you know, depends on if you're running dogs or if you're just, you know, looking for a shell bag. I mean, I know, like, for my waterfowl stuff, I mean, I've got a designated bag for kind of my goose stuff. And then I got one that you take to the duck blind. And for pheasants, I've got, you know, my dog collar in there and that kind of stuff. So, yeah, little duffel bags or just little shell bags tend to work pretty good for that kind of stuff.
Which, obviously, here at the store, you can come in. And if you have any questions, maybe you're not a bird hunter and you want to try this. A, don't forget your license that you got to get here.
Right.
And then, you know, shotguns. And I know guns have been coming in and out of here quite a bit lately, and you guys do that consignment here too.
Yeah, so we do consignments and used guns, but if you know, if you're going through your closet and there's a gun back there that you just don't shoot anymore, and you're like, well, I'd kind of like to upgrade or get a different gun, you know, we can certainly consign it for you, where you name the price and we'll put it on the shelf. We'll give it 30 days, see how it does, and if we're getting some feedback on it, maybe we need to reduce the price a little bit. Maybe it's just the wrong time of year to sell that gun. You know, shotguns are kind of tough this time of year because most of the waterfowl and upland seasons are over. Once people start drawing their tags, you know, then they're going to start looking for some hunting rifles. So if you got an old hunting rifle in your closet that you're like, well, that was my kid's and we don't really shoot that one, it's we moved on to a bigger caliber gun. You know, now's a good time to bring those in and consign those as well.
Yeah, so the options are really big here at Rocky Mountain Discount Sports, where, and we talked about this last week, but you guys do have one of the biggest selections of firearms in Wyoming, and that includes you know, handguns. You said that you had just your glass is full.
The glass is full, and the number of revolvers we have right now is phenomenal. We've got some big bore stuff, and we've got, you know, just like those 22 revolvers and just 22s in general. This is the good time of year to kind of get the kids out for a quick little bit and set up some targets, you know, and just get them outside and get them away from the TV.
Right. So, you know, weather, I mean, we're in the 40s and 50s, and then it'll drop a couple of days and then back up. So the situation up on the mountain, if you were thinking about doing some snowshoeing or something like that, it's still, you know, pretty good conditions up there because you don't have to wear big clothes.
Well, you were up there quite a bit this last week.
I was, and there was a lot of snow there, so you know. But luckily, I bought snowshoes here. I'm not a big fan of the snowshoeing, right. But
it does get the job done.
It sure does. Yeah. Get in and check this all out. I mean, obviously, whatever you're looking for, outdoor. Camping, hunting, fishing, they've got it here at Rocky Mountain Discount Sports. Come on by and check them out.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
It's Drew and Brian back at Rocky Mountain Discount Sports. And Brian, we talked a little bit about the fact that fishing season is upon us. You know, that we've been seeing people on the river for quite some time. We've talked the last couple of weeks about drift boats out and people starting to take advantage of the weird winter that we're having. And then we saw that climate change is going to kill off all the walleye.
Oh, yeah. We read it. It's in print. It's got to be true. Yep.
Now, this isn't here in Wyoming, where obviously they've been working for years to maintain a great fisheries all over the place. And you actually sent that to Lars out at the hatchery and kind of chuckled, huh?
Well, you know, you can't believe everything you read, right? And, I mean, even if it is true, I'm sure just like during the dinosaur age, you know, there'll be something else that will replace them.
Right.
So,
but saying that, I think that this year will be a good year for me to help eliminate the problem. Then, if they're going to die off, I might as well go catch them.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's got to happen. I mean, right? I mean, we're going to be on the water real soon. I mean, guys have already been up on Alcova. I know Gray Rocks is open. I've seen a couple of really nice fish come out of there. Glendo looks like it's probably pretty darn well. If it's not completely open right now, I'd be shocked. But
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be a lot of opportunities. It's now just picking your days where you've got some weather that you can appreciate it.
So when the marina opens up for the first time under the new owner, Mark Green, which we talked to last week, 10 days in will be the first walleye stampede. And, I mean, things coming along with that?
Yeah, we're sitting at about 70 entries for that first one, which is really good for this time of year. And that first one's May 11th and 12th, I believe. So, yeah, pretty excited to get all that rolling. Of course, that second Glendo tournament, June 1st and 2nd, we've rebranded that as our Governor's Cup. So we've got some really cool trophies, some rings for the winners, with customized rings, and we got some neat ideas going on, and we're also going to be doing a kids event on that Friday. So hope to be working with the Boys and Girls Club and then some of the kids down there in the Glendo area. So
which is kind of cool, you know, the Walleye Club, they ought to obviously provide fishing poles for kids, and really the angling community really loves the community and giving back, and that's kind of one of the best parts.
Well, it's rewarding. All I mean, we all feel pretty blessed that, you know, we have the opportunity to even go fishing, right? I mean, you look at a lot of people in big inner cities that, you know, they can't just be half an hour from a nice reservoir where they can actually catch fish without having a million people on their backs. And for us to be able to have such great waters around here, and then to be able to share our passion with some of like today's youth, and especially youth that, you know, may come from a single family home that just doesn't have that opportunity to go out, or, you know, everybody needs to be taught how to fish at one point or another. You can't learn it all on YouTube.
Well, that's true. And, you know, people rely on YouTube a lot to take the kids' time. But if you would instead take the kid to the pond and do some fishing, and help out big time.
Yeah, what does that teach a man to fish? Or
yeah, all right. Teach yeah. man to fish forever, right?
Yeah.
Our buddy Noah, you know, yeah. I mean, yep. He takes his kayak down on his bicycle, I think. And
yeah, he's at Yesness Pond on a regular basis.
So it's always fun to see that and see kids have opportunities like that. And, you know, Jay does that too with the Walleye League, where, you know, they have kids divisions in that too. So it really is kind of a cool thing.
It's just nice to be able to have something where you can get them interested and involved, right? I mean, we all know that, I mean, every kid out there spends way too much time behind the TV or a computer. Yeah. And to actually get outside and put your feet in the dirt and, you know, throw a rock occasionally into the rock, you know, whatever, you know, I mean.
It's not the window, kids. Not the windows.
But, you know, throw them into the stream, throw them into the lake, whatever you're going to do. See how far you can skip a rock. I mean, I think the art of skipping a rock is gone.
It is. You know, and that's one of those things that I remember as a kid. That was the coolest thing, is Grandpa would take me to the creek,
yeah.
And we'd fish and throw rocks. And so what are you thinking this year is going to be fishing wise? I know that we've kind of speculated a little bit, but as we're getting closer, are you seeing signs that it's going to be good or it's going to be slow?
You know, a lot of it just depends on water levels, and then it's going to depend on runoff. Well, we're not having any crazy runoffs yet. I mean, obviously we'll probably see some more snow, and that's going to affect some things, and the warmer weather and the cycles with the moon phases and whatever else might get walleye spawning a little early, or heck, maybe it makes them go later. I don't know. But the water levels are looking pretty good right now. You know, Glendo and Pathfinder are both around 65%. And the last report I just saw for most of these drainages, we're pretty darn close to 100% of snowpack. So even though we don't see a lot of snow here, a lot of our snow comes out of the Snowies and the Front Range of Colorado. So we're looking like we're in pretty good shape to have enough water to at least, you know, take care of our reservoirs. A lot of that's going to depend on how much draw downriver, you know, through Nebraska is the call on it.
Yeah, and I know, like, Texas, they've already had fires and crazy things like that. So you never know what kind of year it's going to be. But hopefully, you know, we have enough water to, you know, maintain at least a good year.
I'm definitely hopeful. It looks like right now we're sitting in pretty good shape. The Bureau of Rec did a pretty good job of holding water in Pathfinder, and I think Seminole as well. So fingers crossed, you know, water levels are good. And I think, you know, with Pathfinder being down the last couple years, this higher elevated water levels should give us that new lake effect that we talk about, with that, you know, all that growth on the shorelines, protecting the bugs and the minnows. So I think it's going to be a good year.
Well, I'll tell you that if you are going to just start fishing this year, great place to come is Rocky Mountain Discount Sports. And if, you know, we talked about this a little bit last week, if it's been 6 months since you've touched your rods and reels and tackle, it's probably a good time to restock and re-spool.
Yeah, you know, the weather's not just every day perfect, especially, you know, on my days it seems like it's really cold and really windy. But those are good days to just, you know, fire up the little Mr. Heater in the garage and just, you know, go through your tackle and make sure that, you know, you reline some spools. And, you know, I usually strip all mine down, kind of clean them up, you know, re-lubricate them a little bit, and then bring them into the store and re-line them all, you know, first of the season.
So it really is a good idea. You think about, you know, you maintain your car, so why wouldn't you maintain your fishing rods?
Yeah, I mean, boats, the same thing. You know, you got to get the muffs put on that outboard motor and start it up and make sure the batteries are good and make sure everything's working properly and make sure that you're not that guy on the dock on that first trip out. Uh-huh. Click, 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 click. All right, who's holding up the dock? What's going on with that guy?
You know? Get out of there. Come on. Get in here. Check it out. Rocky Mountain Discount Sports.
Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors with Drew Kirby. If you have a question, want to make a comment, or have an idea for a show topic, message us on the My Country mobile app. Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.